Will AI ever write a novel that wins the Nobel Prize for Literature? That's the topic today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. AI is starting to write things, and some of the copy reads pretty well. Other writing is garbage. What's the capability and limitations of AI writing? That's what we're going to talk about today with our guest, Summer Bringsjord of Rensselaer Polytechnic. Dr. Bringsjord is a professor of cognitive science. He's a professor of computer science, and he's a professor of management and technology at Rensselaer. And he is the director of the Rensselaer AI and Reasoning Lab. That's the RAIR lab at Rensselaer. Dr. Bringsjord, welcome again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And it's a triple time honor to be talking to you.
That's right. Well, you know, I never get tired of compliments, so that's always great. You wrote an article called Artificial Intelligence and Literary Creativity. That was a long time ago. In fact, it was last century, 1999. And more recently, in 2013, you wrote What Robots Can and Can't Be. Now, in this work, you claim that AI will never write creative prose. What's your basic argument that AI will never write creative prose?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can distill it to a single argument, but there's certainly the one that leads the way. If the I'm talking about novels here, because I remember at day camp, my mother sent me to this expensive ritzy day camp when I was younger, and it was wonderful. But I remember we had some session where the counselors were trying to convince us that by rotating a wheel, we could all be story generators. We could all make stories. And for whatever reason, the counselor took this very seriously. You know, you change the character names, you change the actions, but essentially every story, maybe not, you know, literally probably true, every story had the same number of sentences. And I remember saying, oh, man, I'm so sorry, but could we go out and swim in the lake? Could we do something else? And no. This is, you know, I'm thinking, my gosh, there's no real creativity. You know, it's a wheel and it's boxed us into a corner. So at the other end of the spectrum from this kind of plug and play way to generate fiction, we have great exemplars. So we have.
You have to elaborate on that a little bit. You spun the wheel and it stopped at a place. What were some of the examples?
Well, no, you could. It was conscious and deliberative. You could change the character names, so you could make the protagonist, instead of Betty, be Billy. So now we've got a gender change. With that would automatically come appropriate changes for the pronouns. And the gender switching there. Basic actions were set for movement along a storyline. And there was an arc to it. There was an arc to it, as I remember. So you got a genuine story, but it was always the same frozen space of stories. I don't know what the size of the space was, but I think some of these things years and years ago, I'm dating myself, I think some of these things were actually even in cereal boxes.
Really?
And from the standpoint of the history of AI, actually, they go back to Ramon Lull, who had an impact on Leibniz, who was of the opinion that if he built such a wheel big enough, he could figure out how to reply to any skeptic when trying to convert them to Christianity. And so it was a small space of stories and very rigid with minor variation. And that's basically what we're talking about when we're talking about fanfare being stimulated by some of the things AI is doing today. I'm talking about things at the other end of the spectrum. I'm talking about, so to your question and to the leading argument, I don't care who you are. If you're an author and you're aspiring to do something that's significant, you referred earlier to the Nobel Prize, you know, the Pulitzer Prize, whatever. If you're aspiring to do something like that, win something like that, you are really out of luck if you don't have characters. If you don't have characters, you lost before you got started. you can say, well, I want to do a prose poem. No, I didn't say prose. I said novel. I'm talking novel. Sustained narrative needs characters. All right, great. So now we know that. Maybe that's just being reminded of something totally obvious. But if we need a character, where does that character come from? How do we get the character? Do we steal the character from some movie that's already been done? So we've got the, maybe we do that. Let's take the character from, but where did the person come up with the character that was in the great literary movie? Where did it come in the case of the characters in fiction? You have to create the characters, and in order to do that, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the character. And if you put yourself in the shoes of the character that you're creating, you're exploiting the fact that you are a conscious creature. You're doing a form of creativity that requires consciousness. And that, since machines can't be conscious, is a real problem for the machine. So that's argument number one. Argument number two is, and I will not say who this person is, but I was at an event, a social event, and the very topic that you have engaged me on here, which clearly I'm probably overly passionate about, but was active. And the assertion was made to me, well, you know, writing is very mechanical. You know, you've got the syntax is pretty simple. Writing's mechanical. We got Shakespeare emulators and Shakespeare parties where people just on the spot confabulate and sound just like Hemingway. Sorry, not Hemingway. I don't know if I said, I don't want to say Shakespeare. So, okay. You know, and my response was immediate. Really? Have you read any Proust? Have you read all of Proust? Have you read a 427 word sentence by Proust? That was created from scratch. So wait, excuse me. There wasn't a 225 word sentence that was reminiscent of the 427 word sentence. No, he wrote the 427 word sentence from scratch. Okay. So don't tell me, you know, the syntax is yeah, you can handpick the syntax that you say is simple, but I'm going to tell you right now, we have machines that are supposed to understand natural language, translate natural language that they have, quote, understood into some other natural language, and also generate from underlying content natural language. And I'm just going to tell you, and it was a cheerful exchange, although there was an edge to it, I won't deny, I'm just going to tell you I'm familiar with that AI technology. And you try giving it not the longer Proustian sentences, just take one that's, you know, in the top 30% for complexity or at that level. Let me know what your parser does with that sentence. I'd love to see that result. So problem number two is that the language itself is too complex. And the dominant approach today to natural language understanding with the advent of machine learning was painfully reflected in the movie Ex Machina, where I think it's kind of a dark movie, you know, and it relates to the Turing.
What was the name again?
Ex Machina. E-X, yeah, Ex Machina. And it's really, it's about the Turing test. So I think given your interests and your knowledge and maybe even some of our prior discussion, you will find it. Again, I'm telling you it's dark and I don't think it's going to win. It's never going to win any placement in the top 10, but it's about the Turing test.
Okay.
It's about androids that can pass the Turing test. And at one point, the protagonist says, wow, I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Wow, this AI is unbelievable. How did this AI arrive on the scene with the capacity to talk back and forth conversationally in a way that is this good? And it passes the Turing test, unrestricted Turing test. And the answer comes back, well, we listened in on everyone's cell phone conversations and got all that data, and then we unleashed machine learning on it. And my immediate, was allowed to go to a pre-screening. I probably should. Yeah, I mean, I kind of panned it. So I went to a pre-screening, you know, and I get to that point in the movie, and I'm watching, and I hear this. I'm like, oh my goodness. So now we know that anyone with any degree of skepticism about how language and AI works together and how hard it is not going to bother taking the movie seriously. So some consultant told them to put this in. You should have left out the details. the minute you put that in, you've got a big problem, is that Proust isn't talking. There aren't, you know, 10 million Prousts out there twittering or tweeting or texting or writing emails or, you know, letters back and forth so that the data would support the machine learning how to do something that's truly impressive from a literary point of view. So this approach is not going to work. There is no data on this by definition, because if the human is originating new paradigms, new ways of writing, stretching the boundaries of syntax, this technique is screwed. You're dead. You can't do it. So that's reason number two why this is a tough challenge. By the way, both of these challenges, if you put your mind to it, I suppose, in AI and you have enough money backing you, can be modulated by saying, well, please let us try to do it for a 2-paragraph long story. Don't make us do a novel. And I, just to be clear, I'm talking about a novel. They've been around for a long time, right? We know what they are.
I see.
I suppose maybe Don Quixote's, that's a novel. So that's what I'm talking about. So those are the two arguments. I could keep going, but those are two.
I just listened to a great translation of Les Miserables, and it was 60 hours. It took me 60 hours to listen to it. But wow, could Victor Hugo turn a phrase? I mean, just the incredible way that he was able to communicate in his work. I think, I don't know if we've lost that today, but he is just so incredible. Now, the length of the article kind of brings me to the next thing I wanted to talk about. And this is a report from the media, from pretty high credentialed places, about AI being able to write. The first headline is from Forbes. It says, artificial intelligence can now write amazing content. And what does that mean for humans? And included in that article is the statement, many financial institutions are churning out 10 to 15 page financial reports in an instant using, it's a company, Narrative Scientist's NLG platform, Quill.
Yeah.
So that's one of the claims that these people are making, that these financial reports can be generated by this AI. I guess in one sense, that's really not being creative, is it?
We've talked, I think, in the past about grades or levels of creativity. I wouldn't be unhappy saying that some simple form of creativity is satisfied in the case of these NLG systems. But clearly, we're not talking about creativity that's necessary to write a literary or genuinely belletristic novel. The reason is, in the case of finance, the data, the knowledge, a sentence about the current market cap of Apple computer, if it's a nice polished sentence that the machine has generated, wonderful. Well, where did the knowledge come from that the sentence expresses or communicates? It was already there. It was pre-stored. In the case of creative literary activity, you got to create the stuff from which you generate to begin with. So you can't, I guess I wouldn't consider Elmore Leonard's fiction as entertaining as it is creative, but look, I mean, even he didn't just start down and write, quote, stream of consciousness. What he did, you know, do the generation of natural language. What he did was get some characters in mind first in a couple of situations. Then he was off to the races. So he created all that background knowledge himself. In the case of finance, all of that is pre-stored. Now, it's a wonderful AI strategy for making money. I was of this opinion. A friend of mine had a startup company that did rather well in this domain, and it was acquired. You know, I want to do natural language generation where the content is already pre-established and kind of rigidly represented under the hood. I want to do the generation to put it into natural language for humans to digest. Great idea. Great idea. It's an engineering problem. It's wonderful. But if you have to get the knowledge itself from scratch, this is really not relevant. Now, sports would be similar. I'm a sports addict, and my wife is very tolerant, but I'm a huge Patriots fan, and so I follow the NFL, and I still maintain it's a the sport gets you injured. There may be ethical problems with it, but for pure fan pleasure, it's just amazingly complex, etc. And sometimes I listen to games And I'm looking at people commenting, and they have six, seven, you know, maybe, I don't know, eight figures. You know, they get paid a lot of money, and they're doing the running commentary, et cetera. And, you know, sometimes I'm listening, I'm thinking, wow, you're lucky that you live in 2019 and you don't live in 2025 or 2030, because you wouldn't have a job doing what you're doing. Now, there are other people who are doing commentary, who are doing what I'm talking about, where they aren't just in command of everybody's jersey number, everybody's basic stats, everybody's reported personality and tendencies before they show up, and then do play-by-play. You know, they're doing something generative at the knowledge level. And I, as much as I'm not a Cowboys fan, I have to say Tony Romo, he's done amazing things right out of the box commenting, because he said, "Oh no, that did you see that? That's an audible, and here's what's going to happen." Now that is quite different. That it's heading in that direction of being knowledge generative. He's making inferences to generate new knowledge on the spot, and then he's tapping into the background knowledge that he has as a good broadcaster because he's done his homework, and then he's generating the English. So we don't see that in the case of finance. We don't see that in the case of summarization either, because summarization by definition is piggybacking on prior content that's already in play. So you can imagine I'm not super impressed by some of the things that you rightly cite as interesting. But
yeah, you know, there's other sorts of places that generate short commentary. USA Today uses something called Whippets. And NewsTracer is used by Reuters to actually comprise short reports. And BuzzBot was originally designed to crowdsource reporting from the Republican National Convention. So, yeah, all of these are actually conglomerating information that already exists there. You know, you talk about football. It kind of strikes me that probably much of sports radio could be probably replicated with artificial intelligence. It seems to me that they say the same things over and over again. You know, like, Frank, it's all about getting points on the board. You know, it's going to be all about whether we can move the ball. We need to stop their passing game, all of this stuff. And I bet you that could be replaced by AI very easily. But that's my takeaway. Now, there's some other paper generators, and this is really cool. One of them is called SciGen. And it actually generates computer science papers, and they're really weird, but they've actually been accepted for publications in places like IEEE and Springer, where their peer review process wasn't at their top. They were later found out and removed. And another one was MathGen. And if you go to mathgen.com, you can write your own math paper. And I actually entered our names, and we have a paper now, Summer Bringsjord and Robert Marks, called Positive Pseudo-Independent Finite Subrings in Rational Algebra. And this was this great name was generated by it. But I read these, and you're right. If you go to any length, you detect that there's something phony. Especially the more expertise you have, the greater domain expertise you bring to the paper, the quicker you recognize it. I don't know if you're, I don't know. Do you remember the movie The Stepford Wives or Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Yes. I mean, not scene by scene, but certainly.
In both of those, there were robots there, or in one case, it was an artificially generated human by these pods from outer space, an Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But you looked at them, you know, they looked human and they acted human. But if you were with them for a little bit, you realized that they were phony. And that's kind of been my experience with these writers. These like the MathGen papers and the SciGen papers. They look good when you look at them, but you get a little bit in depth and you realize they're totally phony. And I suspect that the same thing you're talking about in terms of AI writing great novels, it's going to be exactly the same thing. In fact, there was one. This is from Singularity Hub. It says, the first novel written by AI is here, and it's as weird as you'd expect it to be. Now, I have not read the novel, but I think weird means that it really isn't very coherent and comes up with very, very strange sort of sort of phrases. So even though we have AI writing all of these things, your claims, you believe, still stand up about AI not being able to write good prose.
I think so. At least that's my opinion. And it's interesting you mentioned the domain expertise, the variance of domain expertise, and what role that plays here, that if the person judging is familiar with the domain, has some bona fide knowledge, perhaps even expertise, they know that something's up, and they're not going to give it high marks. So yeah, that's true. And it does go back to the Turing test. And I think maybe something we have discussed in the past, that as far as anyone can tell, Turing was of the opinion that you shouldn't prevent judges from showing up who have any particular expertise. And people have shied away from that when running sort of pseudo Turing tests in the quote real world. Here, yeah, Forbes telling me it's weird. I could not wager enough money that what you suspect is true, that weird means this is really not very good.
Exactly. One of the big things too is to collect everything in an overarching theme. It's kind of like AI can only look at its feet. It can't look at where it's going. And I think because it always looks at its feet, it always gets this kind of bad rep as you walk a little bit, because again, it doesn't know where it's going. In your talk a few minutes ago, you used a word that I had to look up, and that's the word belletristic. And it was the first time I've heard the word. And could you define belletristic? Because that seems to be a key word in your discussion of what AI can and can't write.
Yeah, I think to be truly literary means it's got to be truly, when applied to fiction, it's got to be truly literary fiction. It's got to have great depth. And I think ultimately, and I'm partially operationalizing this and going beyond what dictionary.com undoubtedly is going to say, but I need the people living at the time who are people of letters to apprise this fiction and allow it into their community, to affirm it. So that's necessary. Now, we know, though, what the attributes would be that would be necessary for genuinely literary fiction, is another way to say belletristic fiction here. If people of letters say, but you only have a character that had one continuous emotion, it didn't seem like a robust character. I don't understand. Why do you think this would be a good character? You know, step number one is what they tell you in film school for three-dimensional characters and the software that humans use to write screenplays. You can't have belletristic fiction unless you have a truly rounded, well-developed, coherent character. So belletristic, truly literary fiction that would be regarded or classified that way and given the suitable accolades that you would expect, that's what it would take.
So in a way, it kind of goes back and talks about domain expertise from the credentialed people, right, that you talk about, who are looking for kind of aesthetic values rather than specific content. They're looking at things from a higher level. Excellent. Well, thank you, Dr. Bringsjord. We've been talking to Dr. Selmer Bringsjord of Rensselaer Polytechnic about some wonderful things, and our time is up for this podcast. So until next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.
belletristic. That's a great word. Did you look that up or did you know that from previous education?
I think that at some early age, my parents figured out how to do some kind of brain upload where they gave me the full Oxford English Dictionary.
Really?
So I just have it. The other day, my wife was upset at me for taking too long on painting a door. We took down the front door. She said, I need you to finish this door because I can't put any Christmas decorations up in front of the door because it'll draw attention to the door. And I want to do that. And I said, well, I don't really want any gimcrack decorations in the front of our house. And she said, any what? I said, gimcrack. And so she said, that's not a word. And I said, no, it is a word. She said, well, what letter does it start with? And I said, a G. And she said, well, that even makes it more implausible, gimcrack. And, you know, she looked it up and kitschy, you know, stuff that it's kind of. So, of course, I'm kidding. I don't know where the altruistic knowledge of that came from.